Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Alice Bryant. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, people who survive cancer during childhood and early adulthood are more likely to experience severe, life-threatening health problems later on in life. In fact, many of the survivors die before other people the same age. Those are findings from a recent study. A report on the study was published this month in The Lancet Oncology. Researchers followed almost 12,000 young cancer survivors and about 5,000 of their siblings for about 20 years. All of these relatives were said to be in good health. The cancer survivors were free of the disease for at least 5 years at the start of the study. Yet they were still about 6 times more likely to die during the follow-up period than their siblings. Tara Henderson was the lead writer of the report. She noted, "Before 1960, cancer before the age of 21 years was uniformly fatal, and currently, about 83% of anyone diagnosed with cancer before the age of 21 years can be cured." Henderson is director of cancer survivorship at the University of Chicago's Comprehensive Cancer Center. She said that doctors need to put more effort into learning the long-term side effects of cancer treatment. The Reuters news agency reported her comments. Better survival chances also mean children may have a higher risk of developing health problems as a result of tumors or cancer treatments. The problems include heart disease, old cancers returning, or possible new cancers. Many doctors turn to chemotherapy to treat cancer patients. They use drugs to stop the growth of cancer cells, either by killing the cells or by stopping them from dividing. Yet chemotherapy can weaken the heart muscle, and some newer targeted medicines increase the risk of heart failure. So says the American Heart Association. The group also notes that radiation can cause heart rhythm disorders and structural damage in blood vessels and heart valves. By age 45, 56% of the childhood cancer survivors diagnosed with the disease before age 15 had developed severe health problems. That compares with 39% of survivors diagnosed while growing up or in early adulthood, and 12% of siblings without any history of cancer. Death rates were also higher for cancer survivors diagnosed during childhood than for those diagnosed during adolescence or early adulthood. However, survivors of childhood cancer were less likely to die from returning tumors than survivors who were diagnosed a little later. Researchers followed people diagnosed with cancer between 1970 and 1999. They found that it is possible that long-term results might be better for people diagnosed today because of better treatments. The researchers said that is partly because of changes designed to improve survival chances and decrease the risk of severe treatment-related health problems. One limitation of the study is that researchers lacked information on three kinds of cancer: tumors in the gonads, thyroid, and skin. Those three make up about 40% of cancers discovered in 15 to 20-year-olds. Päivi Latinmäki is a doctor with Turku University in Finland and the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm, Sweden. She noted that some cancer-related complications do not become apparent until several years following cancer treatment. In an email to Reuters, she urged cancer patients to adopt a healthy lifestyle to help make severe or life-threatening medical issues less likely to develop. She added that patients can do a number of things, including exercising, eating well, not smoking, and keeping a healthy body weight.
Amy Melendez was in a supermarket in Maryland with friends when it happened to her. She had ordered one of her favorite drinks, a corn-based beverage from Central America called atole. She began to drink her atole when a man nearby asked if it was good. But the man was using casual language, and Melendez did not understand his question. So she said, "I don't know." The man then asked how it was possible for her not to know how the drink was. That's when the laughter began. The man laughed, her friends laughed, Amy Melendez felt a little foolish. Her spoken exchange with the man was entirely in Spanish. Melendez is a Spanish learner, but she is also an English language teacher. Now, she supervises English and service worker training programs at 32BJ in Maryland. Melendez has shared the supermarket story with many of her students. She wants them to know she can relate to the challenges of learning a language. Being laughed at or joked about can happen no matter what language you are learning. And it may make some learners nervous about speaking their new language. However, experts say there are ways to overcome those feelings. So, on Education Tips today, we offer suggestions from a few teachers. But first, let's explore why some people laugh. Winter Oshiberu teaches English in Washington, D.C. and Maryland, including for the International Center for Language Studies and a nonprofit group called Paper Airplanes. She says most people who laugh are not trying to be mean or hurtful. Instead, a language learner's pronunciation or way of putting words together may sound unusual to some native speakers and can take them by surprise.
And they're not thinking about how it might make the other individual feel who is learning the language. It's just a natural instinct. when you hear something that sounds a little bit different than what you would expect to hear or how you would expect to hear it.
If the way you say something sounds different or unusual to a native speaker, that person may not have had much contact with foreigners. Josh Plotkin is an American living in Brazil. He has been fluent in Portuguese for years. He operates a website called BrazilianGringo.com, which teaches foreigners how to live in Brazil and improve their spoken Portuguese. On his website, Plotkin notes that some Brazilians who have little contact with foreigners laugh at him because they aren't used to hearing an American speaking Portuguese. He notes similar experiences when traveling in other countries and trying to speak their languages. But whether the reason is lack of contact or something else, we have tips for overcoming the fear of using your English. The first suggestion is to relax and be patient with yourself. A piece of advice from Oshi Beiru. She says to remind yourself that you are learning the language, so it is normal to make mistakes. She advises not to be too hard on yourself.
I think sometimes the best thing to do is just smile and just breathe and relax and try not to let the fear of laughter stop you from learning the language or immersing yourself in the language.
Oshi Beiru also suggests learners avoid setting learning goals that are too strict, which can sometimes become a barrier rather than help. Other experts note that people who make jokes or laugh may not have studied a second language. This is yet another reason not to judge yourself by the reactions of others. Plotkin warns against worrying that people are thinking, "You look like a fool trying to speak our language." Ideas like these can hurt your progress and be a barrier to fluency. Second tip is to practice your speaking skills. Both Melendez and Oshi Beiru say practice is one of the best ways to deal with fear. Melendez suggests doing role plays. In a role play, two or more people act out an imaginary situation. For example, going to a market or talking to a bus driver.
You know, there's a new situation, a situation you might not feel comfortable in. What are the phrases you might need? What are the words? Is there someone you can practice with? But definitely just going through those role plays will help you overcome the fear.
You can imagine, for example, your friend is a bus driver. You have a lot of questions about taking the bus. You can practice the questions on your friend. Melendez says if you are unable to find a practice partner, you can practice in your head or you can talk out loud. Oshi Beiru says another solution is to record your voice as you train by yourself. That way, you can listen for mistakes, whether in your wording or pronunciation, and correct them. Our third tip is, don't be afraid to ask questions. If you are worried about what to do in the moment when someone makes a joke, the solution can be simple. Kindly ask the person the reason for the laughter. Like this, says Melendez.
You know, is there a different way that I could have said it, or how would you usually say it?
She said the issue could be something very simple. Then, once you know the issue, you can bring the information to a trusted person, such as a friend or practice partner, and ask them to help you correct it. The fourth and final tip is to keep a sense of humor. Keeping a sense of humor can make the long process of learning a language more fun. You might even laugh with the person who is laughing or making the joke. This may feel strange at first, but gets easier with time. Josh Plotkin notes that over time, he has come to understand that being laughed at when speaking a foreign language is not a bad thing. He has learned not to take it personally. These days, he even laughs along with the people, using it as a way to make new friends. I'm Alice Bryant.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Barbara Klein.
And I'm Steve Ember. The stock market crash of 1929 marked the beginning of the worst economic crisis in American history. Millions of people lost their jobs. Thousands lost their homes. During the next several years, a large part of the richest nation on earth learned what it meant to be poor. Workers lost their jobs as factories closed. Business owners lost their stores and sometimes their homes. Farmers lost their land as they struggled with falling prices and natural disasters. And Americans were not the only ones who suffered.
One of America's greatest writers, John Steinbeck, described the Depression this way: "It was a terrible, troubled time. I can't think of any 10 years in history when so much happened in so many directions. Violent change took place. Our country was shaped. Our lives changed. Our government rebuilt." Steinbeck, winner of the 1962 Nobel Prize in Literature, said, "When the market fell, the factories, mines, and steelworks closed, and then no one could buy anything, not even food."
An unemployed auto worker in Detroit, Michigan, described the situation this way: "Before daylight, we were on the way to the Chevrolet factory to look for work. The police were already there, waving us away from the office. They were saying, 'Nothing doing, no jobs, no jobs.' So now we were walking slowly through the falling snow to the employment office for the Dodge Auto Company. A big, well-fed man in a heavy overcoat stood at the door. 'No, no,' he said, 'there was no work.' One Texas farmer lost his farm and moved his family to California to look for work. 'We can't send the children to school,' he said, 'because they have no clothes.'"
Sunday is gloomy, my hours are slumberless, dearest, the shadow.
The economic crisis began with the stock market crash in October 1929. For the first year, the economy fell very slowly. But it dropped sharply in 1931 and 1932. And by the end of 1932, the economy collapsed almost completely. During the 3 years following the stock market crash, the value of goods and services produced in America fell by almost half. The wealth of the average American dropped to a level lower than it had been 25 years earlier. All the gains of the 1920s were washed away. Unemployment rose sharply. The number of workers looking for a job jumped from 3% to more than 25% in just 4 years. One of every three or four workers was looking for a job in 1932.
Those employment numbers did not include farmers. The men and women who grew the nation's food suffered terribly during the Great Depression. This was especially true in two states, Oklahoma and Texas. Farmers there were losing money because of falling prices for their crops. Then natural disasters struck. Year after year, little or no rain fell. The ground dried up, and then the wind blew away the earth in huge clouds of dust. All that dust made some of the farmers leave, one Oklahoma farmer remembered later, but my family stayed. We fought to live. Despite all the dust and the wind, we were planting seeds, but we got no crops. We had 5 crop failures in 5 years.
Falling production, rising unemployment, men begging in the streets. But there was more to the Great Depression. At that time, the federal government did not guarantee the money that people put in banks. When people could not repay loans, banks began to close. In 1929, 659 banks with total holdings of $200 million went out of business. The next year, 2 times that number failed. And the year after that, almost twice that number of banks went out of business. Millions of people lost all their savings. They had no money left.
The Depression caused serious public health problems. Hospitals across the country were filled with sick people whose main illness was a lack of food. The health department in New York City found that 1 of every 5 of the city's children did not get enough food. 99% of the children attending a school in a coal mining area of the country reportedly were underweight. In some places, people died of hunger. The quality of housing also fell. Families were forced to crowd into small houses or apartments to share costs. Many people had no homes at all. They slept on public streets, buses, or trains. One official in Chicago reported in 1931 that several hundred women without homes were sleeping in city parks. In a number of cities, people without homes built their houses from whatever materials they could find. They used empty boxes or pieces of metal to build shelters in open areas.
People called these areas of little temporary houses Hoovervilles. They blamed President Hoover for their situation. So, too, did the men forced to sleep in public parks at night. They covered themselves with pieces of paper, and they called the paper Hoover blankets. People without money in their pants called their empty pockets Hoover flags. People blamed President Hoover because they thought he was not doing enough to help them. Hoover did take several actions to try to improve the economy, but he resisted proposals for the federal government to provide aid in a major way, and he refused to let the government spend more money than it earned. Hoover told the nation, "Economic depression cannot be cured by legislative action or executive decision." Many conservative Americans agreed with him, but not the millions of Americans who were hungry and tired of looking for a job. They accused Hoover of not caring about common citizens. One congressman from Alabama said, "In the White House, we have a man more interested in the money of the rich than in the stomachs of the poor."
On and on, the Great Depression continued. Of course, some Americans were lucky. They kept their jobs, and they had enough money to enjoy the lower prices of most goods. Many people shared their earnings with friends in need. Years later, John Steinbeck wrote, "It seems odd now to say that we rarely had a job. There just weren't any jobs." But he continued, "Given the sea and the gardens, we did pretty well with a minimum of theft. We didn't have to steal much." Farmers could not sell their crops, he explained, so they gave away all the fruit and vegetables that people could carry home.
Other Americans reacted to the crisis by leading protests against the economic policies of the Hoover administration. In 1932, a large group of former soldiers gathered in Washington to demand help. More than 8,000 of them built the nation's largest Hooverville near the White House. Federal troops finally removed them by force and burned their shelters.
"Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick and rivet and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime?"
Next week, we will look at how the Great Depression of the 1930s affected other countries.
"Went slogging through hell, and I was the kid with a drum."
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.